Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Rawson, and this is Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're on about once a month. And you can find out more about this show and other shows by going to our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. So with that, I'll bring in my host and co-host and friend, Pam. Hey, Pam, how are you?
Fine, Mark. Nice to be here tonight.
Yeah, we got all kinds of stuff going on. We got tapping. Now we got an echo. All right, go ahead, Pam.
Well, tonight, by the way, my name is Pam Latour, and you just heard Mark Rawson, and we are the hosts for the Spiritual Connections show. Tonight we have a very special guest, a woman by the name of Catherine Gates Ferris. She has asked us to call her Kathy, because apparently everybody does. That's a nice name for Catherine. And Kathy Gates Ferris has an interesting story, and I'm going to let her tell you, but she has quite a background. When she was 50, she made a commitment to herself to follow her spiritual path, which is brave in and of itself. Since then, she's been led by spirit to develop her skills and knowledge so that she can be of service to others. In 2005, she was ordained an interfaith minister. About the same time, she completed the advanced shamanic practitioner training. She's got so much under her belt here. She's also a trained Jin Shin Do acupressure therapist. And I am going to let her jump in and talk about herself a little bit more. So let's get right to it and introduce Kathy Gates Ferris. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Well, thanks, Pam. I'm delighted to return to your show. I had such a great time last year, and I'm pleased to be back. So, like you said, I had a longing or a calling from spirit a large part of my life, but never felt like I had the time or the money to really pursue that path. And I was married in my late 30s, had children in my late 30s, early 40s, and then I kept saying to myself, when am I going to follow this passion of mine? And I finally said, okay, made a promise to myself when I hit 50, I would find the time. And I worked in public health for many, many years, over 45 years, and in nonprofit situations. And I said to my boss, I think I need to do this. I need to set up a center where we can train healthcare providers in alternative methods of healing. And she said, okay, why don't you set up a center here? And so I was organizing it, and one of my colleagues said to me, you know, there's this really interesting conference coming up. It's called Integrating Spirituality into Healthcare. You should go to this. And so I went. It was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and it was all about shamanic healing and shamanic practices, and that's where I took my basic training in shamanism. And for the next several years, I continued to train, and primarily through the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, which was founded by Michael Harner, who's an anthropologist who studied all different ethnic practices around the world and looking at the core elements of shamanic practice. And shamanism is the oldest spiritual practice in the world. And he formed what he calls core shamanism, which he has been training for many, many years, and he's nationally and internationally recognized. So this was exciting for me because this was the first time I really felt like I could connect with spirit. And in shamanism, you journey to non-ordinary reality and meet up with your helping spirits for information and healing, and you can receive this information and healing for yourself and for others. So it was very interesting and motivating for me, and really exciting to be able to make this connection. And about the same time I was doing the shamanic studies, I also was pursuing this seminary program in interfaith ministry through an organization called One Spirit Interfaith Seminary, which is in New York City. It's based in New York City, but they have students nationally and internationally. It's they do training long distance as well. So I was following those two paths simultaneously, which was good because it kind of balanced me a little. And then in the late, around 2005, 2006, that's when I started training in hypnotherapy. And I trained with several different types of hypnotherapists, including Dolores Cannon, who's quite well known, Roger Wolger, and Michael Newton. And this is, as I was speaking with Mark before, I really began to focus primarily on past life regression work and life between life work, because I found that so fascinating. And it also kind of connected with what I found in my shamanic work in working with spirit.
That's wonderful. Can you tell me, when you work with someone now, it seems like you have quite a bag of tricks. You know, you've got all these things that you can use for healing, but maybe bag of tricks wasn't the best choice of words. But you've got so many modalities that you can use when someone comes to you for help. Is there one primary thing that you focus on, or do you go case by case and use everything?
So it depends on what the person is interested in. But I have to say, the modality I use is love, because love is really what heals us. And in really educating people that they are their own healers. So what, no matter how I work with people, whatever modality I'm using, I always make that the key thing, that you are person who is loved unconditionally by the spirit world, and that you have the power within you to heal yourself, to know yourself, and to find your own path.
What a wonderful answer. Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Sounds good. Thanks. Kathy, you know, the question I have for you is, you know, because you hear a lot of people out there saying they're trained in shamanic practice and all that kind of stuff, but you know, for people who are not familiar with it, can you kind of talk to me about what some of your clients would look like? Like, what do they come to you with, and mm-hmm. what type of shamanic technique would you use to help them with that part of their life?
Mm-hmm. So often people will come because they feel like they may feel powerless, or they may feel like that there's negative energy around them, or they'll feel like, they'll say, I feel like there's a part of me that's lost. And these are all very traditional shamanic practices, doing power animal retrievals for people who feel like they don't have the power that they need to live their life in the best way. Or people will come and they'll say, I feel like there's something around me, or there's this negativity or whatever, and we can do extractions and to remove that. And or somebody will say, I feel like there's a part of me missing. And then we could do soul retrieval to find those lost pieces. And this is all, you know, shamanic work is all kind of allegorical work. It's taking issues that may be hard to define or hard to understand and putting them in a story so that people can understand it better.
Mm-hmm.
And, for, yeah.
So, excuse me. Now, with you said you were kind of studying under one program, and now when you were studying with Dolores Cannon, were you actually doing shamanic work, or were you doing a different type of work with her?
So she's a hypnotherapist. She's actually just she recently deceased, but she's written many, many books on her experiences doing hypnotherapy, and she's very fascinating. She really works with a person's higher self and connects with, you know, really what I would call their helping spirits, but it's really their higher consciousness. And she does, you know, she can regress people to fascinating past lives and also future lives. And she also has communicated through her clients with people like Nostradamus. She actually wrote a 3-book series on her work with Nostradamus through multiple different clients and translating his quatrains. And she's just, I would highly recommend if people are interested in reading her books, because they're actual dialogue that she had with the clients. Mm-hmm. So it's like as if you were there in the session.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had mentioned something very interesting, and I'll share a story with you, but you had said that, you know, you had worked with past lives, but also future lives. A number of years ago, I had gotten my past life certification from Brian Weiss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had a chance to actually stand in line and go ask him a question. And, you know, one of the questions I asked him is, I said, you know, if you look at, you know, to me, in my understanding, especially reading his materials, his different books, Many Lives, Many Masters, which is how a lot of people get introduced to that type of idea past lives, is that, of course, the book was written chronologically. So to me, it was like as he was regressing the woman through her past lives, he was kind of going from the beginning of time through time, and, you know, her stories were advancing and moving through time. And I said to him, I said, you know, is it that, you know, all our past lives kind of correspond with the Earth, and that the Earth is the only place that actually has time? And that, you know, you would basically start your first past life in the beginning of the Earth history, and then you would kind of, go through. And he said, no. He said, you know, you could very easily in your past life, the one previous to this one, been 50 or 150 or 1,000 years into the future. And that was a very interesting concept for me, because I never realized that, you know, that you could jump around in different times. And then it brought up a whole lot of other things, which you could probably do another show about someday, about, you know, quantum and different dimensions and how the Earth is multidimensional and everything is
right. It's
occurring at the same time.
Right.
I'm actually going to redirect back into the shaman question again, because that's originally where I was going to go with some of the questions here. What is it that you were studying with the shaman program, and then you started to do some other work with a shaman program out of New York? And I was wondering if you could tell me what was the kind of the difference you noticed between those two shaman schools or training practices?
I really primarily studied through the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, which was founded by Michael Harner. And he is based in California, but he has nationally trainers across the U.S. I didn't really study shamanism in New York City. I did the Interfaith Seminary in New York City. So I'm not sure if I confused you with saying I was doing those two things simultaneously.
Yeah, I almost, my kind of walk away from it. It's funny because I've been having this discussion with a friend of mine lately. It's funny how you think everybody knows what you're talking about, or at least what other people are getting from your communication. And what I took away from that is that you've studied under two different shaman programs.
Yes.
so thank you for clarifying that. Go ahead, Pam.
Okay. Well, since we're on the shaman thing, I have one last question, and then I'd like to get into the Jin Shindo.
Mm-hmm.
On the shaman, the last shaman question, hopefully, because unless Mark has anything, is I wanted to know if you look at your shaman training overall, like a general concept of it, what would you say would be the one special thing that you could take away from it, the one piece of information that would make it all worthwhile, that one important thing?
Well, it's direct revelation. So you're not going through another person. Anybody can learn this. Anybody can journey to their helping spirits in the lower world, in the upper world, and in the middle world, and make that direct connection.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I love about shamanic work. I like working with clients, but mostly I love teaching people how to journey so that they can have that direct connection.
That's great. I love that answer.
Yeah,
my next question was about Jin Shindo acupressure.
Mm-hmm.
And first I'd like you to explain, if you would, to our audience what exactly it is and what it's used for and what, you know, what the best issue when someone comes to you, what's the issue that you use it most for?
Mm-hmm. So Jin Shindo means the way of the compassionate spirit. And it's a form of acupressure that was founded by a woman named Iona Teagarden, which is a really cool name. And it's really a combination of Japanese acupressure, classical Chinese acupressure and acupuncture theory, and also Ericksonian psychotherapy. Because it's really working, it's body-mind work. And so most of the people that come to me for acupressure are stressed out or exhausted or tired, you know. I'm sorry. And this is very relaxing, as Mark was saying. It's, you know, it's usually can be 60 to 100 to 90 minutes, sometimes 2 hours. And the person is on the massage table, and the acupuncturist, or the acupressurist, I should say, works with their fingers. So there's no needles, as there is in acupuncture, but they work in the same method, in that they work with the 12 meridians in the body, which is where the patterns of our chi, our energy, how it flows through our body. And what can happen is that the chi can get stuck in some of the points in our body, particularly in the neck. A lot of people who are under a lot of stress have a lot of neck problems because there's a lot of tension that gets caught there. And what it does is it blocks the head from the heart. So we lose that connection. So that's why it's called body-mind therapy, because while we're working on the physical points in the body, we're also working with the client's innermost thoughts and getting them to connect with their body and to feel and to think.
Wow, that's lovely. So the Jin Shindo is primarily used for stress. Is it also used for pain?
Yes. Yes, it actually, people come with a variety of different issues. And as I said, we work with the 12 meridians, which are connected to our internal organs. So there's a lung meridian, there's a heart, there's stomach, small intestine, large intestine, and spleen, pancreas, bladder, gallbladder, triple warmer. And all of these systems are associated with different aspects of our body and how it functions. So, and then there's a yin and the yang aspects of the body, and then it also we incorporate the elements of air, fire, water, and so on, metal. So it really gets very complicated. It can be done very simply, but it can also get very complicated when the more you learn about it and the more you understand it, it's layer upon layer of knowledge.
Do you ever mix these modalities together?
Well, I do. I'm not supposed to, but I do. And the reason I say it is because with Jinshin Dao, an aspect of it is Ericksonian psychotherapy. So I have used it, hypnotherapy and acupressure together, and it works really well.
Okay, that's a great answer. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Mark.
Thank you. So, when you use Jinshin Dao, what is one of the things where you've used it and you were just surprised that you were actually able to work with somebody using that particular modality to help them with something? Like, you were like, oh, wow, I never thought I could ever use that to do that.
Yeah. Well, actually, I had a client last week who came to me because she was having neck pain. She'd been in a car accident and, was having neck pain. And so I was working with her on that, and at the same, as part of the process, I was asking questions about what she was feeling in her body, what memories it brought up, and so on and so on. And she got on this, she got these images in her mind, and it was an old teapot, a brown teapot. It was cracked and old, and we talked about the teapot and what it could possibly mean, and she wasn't sure. So, and this is a lot of guided imagery as well. So I had her pour a cup of tea and read the tea leaves, and what did the tea leaves tell her? And she found out, and when she was looking at it, she was seeing these storm clouds around it, and then she got on to, well, this is anger. There's a lot of anger here. And we talked more and more about the anger and what it meant. And then she said, I'm really angry. She goes, and you know what? My therapist that I went to for several years kept saying to me that I had a lot of anger. And I kept saying, no, I don't have anger. I'm not angry at anybody. And for the first time, she was able to connect with the anger. And we actually identified a few situations in her life where the anger came from. And we worked with a technique where you, resolve the anger by looking at it as a physical object and manipulating it and reducing it and then taking control over it and so on. So she was so astounded that during this session, that she was able to resolve a lot of this anger that she felt inside of her that she never had been able to acknowledge with her therapist.
Wow, that's a great story.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, before the show we were talking a little bit about how you had a little bit of an injury and how that kind of shifted a few things for you. Why don't you go ahead and share that story with everybody?
Sure. So, I've been working in the field of public health for over 45 years, and I'm 63 now. And last year, I decided I was a senior VP at this organization, working very hard, and I said, I need more time in my life, so I kind of semi-retired, went down to 2 days a week. I was very excited about it because I was putting more time into my healing center and trying to build that up. And I was picking up steam, and things are moving really well. And then I was out walking my daughter's dog in the park, which I do all the time. I walk all the time. And I broke my ankle out of nowhere, just walking down the street. It was it was pretty amazing. And I was actually immobile for 3 months. I was unable to to walk without a big boot and crutches or a wheelchair. And it forced me to slow down, to really connect myself internally, because I was on this, you know, I was on this fast pace again, not in the public health world, but what trying to build my healing center, and I realized that I really needed to stop. And I was able to meditate, and I was able to read, and I was able to think, and it was the most wonderful experience I've had. And I kept telling people I needed this break, you know. And so I would highly recommend it.
Wow, that's great. You know, why don't you go ahead? We're going to take a little break in a minute. So why don't we go ahead and why don't you give out your website to everybody?
Sure. So the name of my center is Dragonfly Healing Center, and the website address is www.dragonflyhealingcenter.com. And the reason it's called that is because in one of my first shamanic dismemberments, which is a practice that shamans use, and it's when you work with spirit and they kind of tear you apart and blow you apart and destroy you, and then they put you back together, they remember you better than before. And the first dismemberment I had, it was Dragonfly that remembered me. So that's why I honor Dragonfly by naming my center after it.
Wow. Now, you had mentioned earlier that you one of the things that you do is you help people to empower them to learn different techniques to travel, to do retrievals, to speak to spirit and stuff like that. Do you offer those programs online?
I do not, but Sandra Ingerman, who is probably one of the best shamanic practitioners in the world, and I truly admire her, and she has been working with the Shift Network and developing online shamanic training. She did a 6-week course that started in December and went through the end of January, and then she did a 12-week course, which I've been taking just because I love Sandra. And this 12-week course is just ending. But and it's really, I had no idea how she was going to be able to do shamanic work online, but she's been very successful at it. So there are, you know, there are options, I guess, on the Internet. But if you, I would just suggest going with a reputable person.
Mm-hmm. Now, where are you working out of? Where are you?
I live in New Jersey, northern New Jersey.
All right, so you're in the northern New Jersey area, so mm-hmm. you're probably servicing a lot of people in New York, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, very great. So let me go ahead and just do a quick break, and then I'll turn the show over to Pam to ask some questions. For everybody that's listening, this is Spiritual Connections Radio. We're on once a month. Sometimes we get on twice a month if we have extra guests. And you can find out more about our show by going to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Go ahead, Pam.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about the life. Let me read it here. I took my glasses off. Oh no, it's the life between life regression, and I'd like to talk about that because that seems extremely interesting. I did a radio show with a hypnotherapist for quite a while called Soul Travelers, and we would talk to people that she had regressed that remember past lives, but now the whole life between life is something that's a little bit new to me. Will you explain to the audience what it is exactly, and to me?
Yes. So Michael Newton is the one that really came up with the term life between life, and he's written several books on it. And how a therapist works with that is you take somebody to their past life, and you take them through their death scene, and then you you continue on into when they go to the spirit world and what happens in the spirit world, with how they connect with other souls in their soul group. And oftentimes they will go to meet with the council of advisors who will review their past, their most recent life, and talk about the lessons that they learned and what they should be thinking about in their next incarnation, what are the issues they want to work on. And so it's kind of very ethereal. It's not as concrete as when you do a past life, when somebody, you know, they plant their feet on the earth and they can see what they're wearing and in the characters in their life and so on. This is because they're in the spirit world, anything can happen. So they can go wherever they want to go, meet up with whoever they want to meet up with, and talk about planning their next life. They can visit the Akashic records and see that library. There's infinite resources available in the spirit world, and that's what makes it so much fun doing life between life, because you never know where you're going to go or who you're going to see and what you're going to find.
Well, that's interesting. How do you use that information with your clients?
So a lot of it, as I said, it's like reviewing the previous lifetime, what the issues are, what the lessons were, if there's any contracts or karmic connections that are still in place. And it's identifying how they're planning future lives and who their soul group is going to be in future incarnations.
Okay, that's really fascinating. And do you do a lot of this kind of work?
I don't do as much as I'd like. It does take about 3 hours.
Okay.
To do that, because you do have to do a past life regression, and then you continue on. So it is longer than a past life regression session, which is usually around 2 hours. So.
I see. And it seems to me that this would be the ideal type of thing to mix with the shaman work. Have you ever done that?
Well, in shamanic work, it's the same thing, because you're working in the spirit world. So, again, it's the same. You know, you can go anywhere you want, talk to whoever you want when you're doing shamanic work. So there are a lot of similarities between life between life work and shamanic work. And it's all because anything is possible. And when I'm first working with clients, even in hypnosis or in shamanic work or even in Jinshin Do, I always say to my clients, use your imagination. Just whatever. don't stop yourself from thinking, this can't be it, this can't be working, I can't do this, I don't know how to do this. I said it's like reading a children's fantasy book. You just let your mind go and you follow it.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm sorry for the distractions. You know, I'm sitting outside in a little place just north of Tampa, Florida, called Land of Lakes, and I'm sitting on a lake, and it was such a beautiful night that I just couldn't do it inside. So I'm sitting in the screen enclosure here looking at the lake, and it was so quiet and so lovely. And then I had to mute my mic a few times because there was this duck that kept quacking right next to me. And then just now a big motorcycle went by. So sorry for the intrusions, but I just couldn't do it inside tonight. So let's talk about the connection. It looks to me like you have three different three different accreditations after your name. Tell us about your accreditations. What have you accomplished?
I have a master's in health science and a master's in public administration. So those have been my professional life work. And then I'm also a certified hypnotherapist, and I'm also getting my massage license in order to practice Jin Shin Do acupressure in New Jersey. You have to have a massage license, so I'm finishing that up. It's 500 hours and 100 hours of anatomy and physiology, which is a course I'm doing online right now.
I did it myself back in the 80s, so I'm clear on what it takes. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, well, I'll turn it back over. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Kathy. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's a little frustrating that I have to get a massage license in order to practice acupressure because they're so different. In many states, that's not the requirement, but in New Jersey it is.
In Florida, it is too. In order to put your hands on someone and ask for money, you need them. You need to be licensed.
Yeah. And so it's all lumped under massage therapy.
Yeah, it's a shame, really, because I went to massage school to work on like pranic healing, light healing, and ended up becoming a massage therapist because of it. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, I'll turn it back over to you.
Sounds good. I'm going to go back and talk about life between life regressions because I love that topic. where did you learn most of your work on that?
So I trained with Paul Arand, who's one of the Michael Newton trainers. He's a senior trainer for the Michael Newton Institute.
Yeah, I've read Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls, which is a great book I'd like to recommend for anybody who wants to learn more about life between life regressions. I think one of the greatest things that I thought was amazing about his documentation of thousands of regressions was the messages that came out of learning about the process of what occurs from the time you die until the time you're reborn again, where, you know, past life is more about going back and looking at some of your past life experiences. So what is, you know, from your experience of either doing that work yourself or working with clients, what do you think is the most interesting thing you've learned, you know, doing the life between life regressions?
I think what probably is people get these aha moments when they see people in the spirit world and then they look back on their previous lives and they recognize them and the different roles they played in previous incarnations, and they begin to realize, yeah, there is a soul group that I'm connected to and that we do incarnate together over time, and that we all play different roles in these incarnations. But basically, the soul group incarnates together and makes the agreements to play different roles in people's lives out of deep love for each other and a desire to help each other grow and learn and understand. So I often say to clients, the people in our lives that cause us the most grief sometimes are actually, if you think about it, they're doing it from a place of unconditional love for us. So think about the lessons that you're learning in this difficult situation. And don't feel like a victim, but say, I chose this in planning my life. So what is it that I wanted to learn from this situation, and to look upon those characters in our lives and say, instead of saying, I hate you or why'd you do this to me, say, thank you very much for allowing me to this experience, because it's made me a better person and I understand myself better and I understand the world better.
Mm, I like that. Can you share another one of those stories working with a client actually using this type of work?
It seems to be the same theme pretty much. It's more of these aha moments where they recognize their connection. And they recognize, again, that this is all done from a place of love. And if we view our life that way, then we understand that we are all beings that are connected to the divine source of unconditional love. And I think that that's what they are able to understand, particularly when they're working with the council and they get this wise guidance.
Mm. Yeah, it's something that I've always researched, but I've never really done a lot of work. I think most of the work I've done has always been in the past life area, and it's interesting because most of my exposure with that is actually working with groups of people to give them like a past life experience, mm-hmm. and doing everywhere from like 5 to 105 people and taking them through an experience. So it's always interesting to see that type of work and everything. I think there has been a couple occasions, especially when I've done past life work, where I've been asked by an individual to go and help them with a phobia or something, mm-hmm. like that. I know from my experience when I was doing my training, I had always had a fear of heights. And, there was nothing in my lifetime. I went and talked to all my family and my aunts and uncles and my grandparents and everything and asked them, I said, is there any reason why I would have a fear of heights? And they're like, no, there's never been anything in your life that would have caused anything like that. And it was funny because I actually got regressed when I was doing my training and got regressed back and found out that I was actually fell off a bridge back in the 1800s and fell into a ravine and died trying, mm-hmm. to save somebody. And I think one of the interesting things that I like to teach people when I do past life journey work with groups of people is that lots of times when you're in your past life experience and you look into the eyes of the individuals that are in that past life experience with them, you can actually see patterns in relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So, as an example, lots of times I'll take a group into a journey and then I'll take them back to a holiday supper table, because sometimes for different parts of history, that might have been the only time that family ever came together. If they were especially living far apart and, depending on what the time period was or what part of the world they were in. And then I would tell them, in the experience, just look across the table at somebody and look into their eyes while they're having the past life experience. And, they'll be looking at, who's supposed to be in that lifetime, maybe in France in 1110. They can be looking across the table at their brother, and it's currently their father in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So they, yep. can actually see that, and the whole idea of, looking into people's eyes and actually, that idea that the eyes are the windows of the soul.
Right.
So, just a couple different things I wanted to share with you. Go ahead, Pam.
Okay. Kathy, I have a question for you. I've got a little boy that's 12 years old. It's my youngest one. And recently, and I haven't dealt with this yet, but recently he has decided that he is afraid of any kind of reptiles. And that, this goes to not just snakes and things that are scary to most people, but also little lizards. He flips out about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that I've really considered even interesting. It hasn't really affected him in any way. Until recently, he's just made the decision, and it seems like a decision. So that's why I haven't really done anything about it. But he's made the decision that he's really afraid of any kind of reptiles. And I was teasing them a few days ago and saying that he was probably eaten by a dinosaur at one point. And he didn't think that was funny. But I was wondering if you would have a light, easy way of dealing with a child that has the beginnings, maybe the beginnings of a phobia, like Mark was saying, fear of heights. Yeah.
Well, there are fast phobia cures, or they're not really cures, but therapies that you could find a therapist that could do it with them, and it usually can be resolved in one or two sessions. And particularly kids around that age, that's when they start coming up. I have a daughter who is afraid of spiders. So, you know, I actually didn't work with her. I had a therapist who, a friend of mine, worked with her, because I don't think working with your kids is always the best thing, best practice.
Very, very true. Okay.
So I would, you know, I think it's there. If you can find somebody that you trust, that you could try a session or two with a hypnotherapist.
Okay. That's a good suggestion.
Hey, Pam, I actually had a question about that. I mean, was he always kind of a little afraid of different things, or is this something that just all of a sudden showed up now that he's 12?
Well, you know, we moved into this house about 2.5 years ago, and the screen enclosure, around the screen enclosure, is all planted, and so there's a lot of little lizards that climb on the screen enclosure, you know, maybe two or three when you come out here at any point. It's a big enclosure. There's a swimming pool and whatnot, and so he never liked to come out here on the terrace in the screen enclosure because of these lizards. So I don't think it's anything that he's ever been exposed to very much until we moved into this house. And then he's just decided that he's afraid of them. And I really don't know if it's something that's really a deep-seated emotional issue, or if he's just finding himself and creating an identity through the idea that this is who he is, and okay, now I'm afraid of lizards.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you for telling us about that.
No,
so I don't think it matters why it's happening or how it's mm-hmm. happening, but if it's presenting a problem for him or for you, then it's worth investigating further. Because they don't want it to debilitate him in any way.
Right. That's true. That's a good suggestion. Okay. You know, I was going to comment earlier. I loved what you said about forgiveness, and that's my own interpretation of it. But mm-hmm. it's a level of releasing energy as you go through life. And I'm working on a doctorate right now, and that's what I was writing about today, which is interesting. This concept of, I've related it to the concept of dying, because if you learn as you go through life, if you learn to just let go of these little resistances that we all build up, you know, if you just decide to forgive them in the moment rather mm-hmm. than letting them build in your body, you learn forgiveness. It becomes a very easy thing. It's like saying I'm sorry. Some people really have a tough time doing that, and some people it just rolls off their tongue. So the concept of forgiveness is fascinating when it comes to not just people that have purposely hurt you, but little things, little irritations, little experiences that you didn't particularly like that stick with you because you didn't particularly like them, and letting those things go as you move through life and not letting them build in your body mm-hmm. because then at the point of death it becomes very easy to just release it all. You've already trained yourself to do that. What do you think about the concept of crossing over?
So let me, I just want to go back to the energy thing first. And,
okay.
Because I believe, and this is what I tell my kids too, I said, you choose what kind of energy you want to have around you. If you want to be angry and resentful, that's going to be the negative energy and it's going to pull you down. You can choose to release that and to live in a higher vibration of light, which is light and love, and not be upset by things that people say to you or do to you. It's a choice you make to either hang on to that negativity or to choose the light. And you actually will feel so much better when you let go of that negative energy.
Well said. That's good.
And okay, so what was your question about crossing over?
Well, you know, I happen to be a shaman myself, and sort of my specialty is death walking. I walk mm-hmm. suck souls over to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And
pump work, right?
Yeah. The concept of living really well so that you can die really well, because it's
mm-hmm.
a cycle. It's not a separate
right.
disconnect. It's a cycle. So it's like you don't know what's going to happen in a birth, and you don't really know what's going to happen in a death. But if you've got the basic understanding of releasing and then taking on the next level of frequency, it's like when you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what you think of this. When you go to sleep, you sort of drop this world behind you. It's like you drop it's like walking through a room and dropping all of your clothes as you walk through the room. When you get to the other side of the room, you put a new set of clothes on. And it's like that with worlds. You know, when you dream, you drop this world and you take
mm-hmm.
on the next world. And so it is with death. When you drop this world, but, you know, when you have insomnia, for example, well, you can't let go. You can't let go of this world, and therefore it doesn't fall away and you don't move into a sleep pattern and you don't dream. Where
mm-hmm.
the same is true with death. When it's impossible to let go, you get trapped.
Yes, you can get trapped, and you can also, if your loved ones won't let you go, you can get trapped.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Yeah. So there's an interesting phenomena happening now. It's called death cafes. Have you heard of those?
No.
It's a recent movement, and you can go online. It's they're called death cafes, and there's different groups all popping up all over. I actually run one in Teaneck, New Jersey. And it's people that get together and talk about death and dying, and it's pretty unscripted. I may have a theme and a few questions to ask and share some information, but it's really an opportunity for people to talk about their fears, their beliefs, and people, like my last death cafe, we talked about near death experiences and what happens in a near death experience and so on. And I think it's really great because, as you know, people are so fearful about death, and they're
mm-hmm.
so afraid to talk about it. This is kind of like a safe place for people to gather with, and it's really, you know, generally people that don't know each other that get together and talk about this.
Wow, that's great. I'm going to look one up.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll even start my own.
Yes, you should.
Well, thanks for that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Mark, I'm turning it back to you.
All right. Yeah, it sounds like we're almost ready to end the show. Kathy, you know, it's been a year since we talked to you. Can you talk to us just really shortly about you know, what have you noticed as far as the type of clients that are showing up for you now versus a year ago?
I'd say that I've had several clients coming to me who are really wanting to connect spiritually. They feel like there's a presence around them. They may hear voices, or they may see things, or some are uncomfortable with it, and some are curious about it. So I've had several clients who have actually helped them to strengthen their spiritual connections and to come into their power and their gift and be able to be happy with this gift that they have.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, why don't you go ahead and give out your website so people can find out more about you?
Yes, again, it's www.dragonflyhealingcenter.com.
Excellent. Always great to have you on the show, Cassie. And Pam, always love having you on, and thank you for bringing in some nature and some beautiful lake energy to the show.
You're welcome.
Motorcycle side effects and all. it's all good.
Well, thank you very much, Mark and Pam. It was a great conversation. I enjoyed it very much.
It was a great conversation. I hope someday we can meet each other, because you seem like such an interesting person. Thank you for being on our show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being on. And with that, I'll say goodnight to everybody.
Good night.
Hey, everybody. You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. You can find out more about us on the internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Thank you.